Hi, you are listening to a free Majority Report. If you would like to become a member, please go to majority.fm.
Yeah, say your
name. Oh, my name's Janine Garofalo. How are you?
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Casual Friday, July 12th, 2013. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. It's Casual Friday, ladies and gentlemen. Joining us will be the great Cliff Schechter to review the week in news and to foretell the future of news. Maybe. Also on the program today, giving me movie recommendations, Matthew Film Guy will be joining us after a four-week absence. Also today on the program, I'm hungover, so I'm speaking a little bit slower than normal. Also on the program today, Senator Warren joins up with Senator John McCain and Senator Cantwell and Angus King of Maine to reintroduce a new Glass-Steagall Act. Harry Reid, Mitch McConnell going at it like cats and dogs. It looks like we're going nuke for filibuster reform. Republicans pass a farm bill finally and do so by basically trying to shut down the food stamp program. All this and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. I should just tell you that, yes, I am moving a little slow today. Some friends of mine moving to London for 3 years, and so went out to a party at a bar, and that is a rare occurrence for me, and so I took too much advantage of it, and I stayed out past midnight.
Wah.
Yes, for the first time perhaps in years, I stayed out past midnight, ladies and gentlemen, and so please forgive me, but enjoy the deeper, dulcer tones of my voice.
Did you manage to avoid talking politics during the party?
Oh, not at all.
Okay.
No. Are you kidding? That's the only
Basically,
thing I do.
Yes.
Let
I just find
tell
somebody.
You something now. Here.
Yes. Exactly. Exactly. No, it was I had some interesting conversations about things that were not politics. Some that were based on the law and foreign policy and the lack of. Of statesmen coming from the legal profession these days, which I don't consider directly political.
More structural.
Also, there was a young comedian there, and I gave him some advice, which was basically, you know,
do the opposite of everything I've done.
No. The advice was make sure that you get overripe in your profession before you expose yourself to the industry. And also try and avoid having a family. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Cliff Schechter.
We'll be right back.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, it is now time for Cliff Schechter. But before we do that, of course, we need to first play the Cliff Schechter theme song.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC, new media, public relations, and strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, Cliff Schechter. Welcome, Cliff.
Not much, man. What's going on with you?
Not much, man. I'm the one with a hangover. What do you mean, not much? I said, how are you?
Well, apparently I can't hear you that well, so that's a problem.
Can you hear me?
I'm doing well. I mean, I have a little bit of a hangover, too, from Sharknado last night.
Yeah, will you explain to me what this is before we get on to something? I keep seeing on Twitter Sharknado. I don't know what that means.
It was the first time I actually live tweeted an event since the Republican debates, and I found it just about similarly entertaining and real as the Republican debates were. It was a movie on the Sci-Fi Channel.
Yeah.
Which had Tara Reid in it. Huge. Ian Ziering of 90210.
Yeah.
How can you not watch that?
Don't know who it is.
And the guy that played Macaulay Culkin's dad in Home Alone. Don't know his name.
I know who Macaulay Culkin is.
Big stars.
Yes.
And essentially what happened is because of global warming, which they come out and say. So this movie may have had some craziness, but they accept global warming. There was not only a huge hurricane, as far as I understood, it turns into a tornado, but over the water off of the coast of Los Angeles, and like hundreds, maybe thousands of sharks get caught up in this tornado. So as it goes across Los Angeles, it flings large killer sharks at people, whites mostly.
But now, wait a second.
Or two made an appearance.
When the sharks get on land, they can't really hurt you, can they?
Well, if they land on top of your head, for example, and bite it off, they can.
That could be house NATO too, because if a house does that, it also will kill you.
That's true. Why had it to be sharks? House NATO maybe is the sequel.
All right.
It may be Louis Gohmert NATO for all we know, but
that
in this particular case, it's Sharknado, and of course, Ian Ziering steals the show at one point because, as we all know, sharks don't have razor sharp teeth and are pretty much hollow on the inside. So he. To save, I think it's his wife or somebody, jumps inside in the air and ends up inside of an entire shark. But he's got a chainsaw, and he chainsaws his way out of it, which is what I would have done, too.
I don't know what to make of this. I don't know if anything you're telling me is real or what.
No, actually, this all really happened in this sci-fi.
Wow.
It was like, you know, basically, Sam, all snark and BS aside, it was a smart way to create sort of a crazy, terrible cult classic because it was very much like Snakes on a Plane.
Okay.
Like you go into it with the expectation that it's going to be utterly ridiculous, and they marketed it, and a few people started like writing about it on Twitter because it was so funny, and then it just became kind of a thing. And I saw some ads, and I'm like, sharks flying out of a tornado attacking people. I think I have to watch this.
Well, there you go. All right. I'm sorry.
You don't sound impressed, frankly.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Okay. All right. I get it. I mean, it was. I guess
you know it's on a fifth of bourbon or like whatever you were doing last night, but
right.
it's okay.
Right. No, there was a lot of gin involved in what I was doing last night, but no sharks, no NATOs, as far as I could tell. All right. But speaking of,
I will just say quickly though the last thing about this, which is it is an experience much like a hangover. In that you wake up the next day and you say to yourself, did I really live tweet Sharknado last night?
I love it.
It's kind of like the hangover where you're trying to remember exactly what the hell you did the night before. You're like, I didn't really do that, did I? That's kind of the way I feel today.
Well,
so, there you go.
Well, just to transition, we have a filibuster NATO that is, let's talk about this. We should also talk about immigration reform because this is the week that, at the very least, the Republicans set the stage in the House to kill immigration reform. I think that, and we've talked about this in the past. I mean, there is There's basically two agendas within the Republican Party. One is a national agenda, and one is an agenda that each specific House representative, Republican House representative, has. And about 90% of them, their whole strategy to win re-election is going to be, I am the white candidate, and I am the candidate that hates gays. I am the candidate that that thinks that women should be chattel, and I'm also the candidate who thinks that brown people should not be
A bit scary, like a brown people NATO.
Exactly.
They come near me, I freak out.
And
yeah, well, interestingly, I know you read that piece by Jonathan Chait in New York Magazine. Which largely true, that they just don't want to legislate. I mean,
well, just let me tell people what that piece is, just so that, because I don't know.
Yeah, the key to the piece, that's a great, I should obviously explain it. The key to the piece was that, you know, it used to be the Republicans wanted things their way in recent years. They wanted, you know, they needed more to get out of it, what they wanted out of it, even if it was crappy legislation, but they wanted to pass something. And it was sort of how the House is now, and really, you know, is an institution. There's plenty of them in the Senate, too, but the House is controlled by people that really just have absolutely don't want to legislate. It's more that they gain by blocking things. You know, I'm trying to think who else wrote a piece about this. I think Michael Tomasky might have.
Well,
about,
I mean, this
how
goes,
legislating has become the positions you take. In other words, it's the same showmanship. There's always been some of this showmanship, but that's the entire thing now.
Well, part of it is
a process to just take positions, even if they're ridiculous and aren't going to pass anything.
Part of this grew out of, I mean, the Tea Party insistence. Like, it became, you know, the idea that a bill would be over 100 pages long, you know, or thousands of pages long in that bill. And that became sort of the, for a while, that's the sort of where I think some of this developed. It was like there became a suspicion to passing any laws, period. That any sort of proactive action by Congress was in and itself, regardless of what the outcome of that law, regardless of what the law said, was bad. And that seems to be, and you know, to a certain extent, this has been there for a long time, right? I mean, the conservatives hate government. This is part of their, and so necessarily it would make sense that they would also hate the process and the idea of lawmaking. And that,
yeah, but there's still a certain, I would argue there's an evolution beyond, if you can consider that, maybe devolution is the right word, beyond where they were before. There used to be that they didn't like government controlling things. They wanted the free market to solve things. And so they legislated in a way in their minds that let that happen the most to solve problems. I'll give you three examples. One was the individual mandate on health care, their idea. The second one, earned income tax credit, which was created under Ronald Reagan. And the third one, cap and trade, created for acid rain initially under George H.W. Bush, as a market mechanism to help clean up the environment. Those were things that were created by them that they looked at as something that, we're not going to do single payer. We're going to do the mandate. We're not going to do a carbon tax. We're going to do cap and trade. We're not going to, tax and spend. We're going to give an earned income tax credit. You may disagree with them, and I do disagree with most of that stuff, not the earned income tax credit, per se, but, you know, at least there were actual positions that they stood for, even the conservatives who hated government. And now they're just a bunch of arsonists.
Right.
They literally are just trying to burn the place down. They're damaging this country. I would question, honestly, their patriotism at this point. There are people that literally, and it comes out when a hurricane hits and somebody blames it on people that aren't religious enough, like the side of them comes out that just has no, that is based on conspiracy, paranoia, religious fundamentalism, all mixed up in some sort of a stew, racial animus and the rest. And it's not, there's no solution. It's just, I hate this, I hate that, I hate the process, we're blocking it, we're blowing it up. And that's the only, another piece that was written in the Atlantic, I didn't get a chance to finish it, I just found it, was starting to read it before we got on the phone, was by Norm Ornstein, who people may know, who's like the only guy left at the American Enterprise Institute with any independence. And, you know, he used to write these very sort of Washington-esque books about what was wrong with the congressional, the congressional wing in Congress, in Washington and whatever. And his last book, he and his partner on it, Thomas Mann, who writes these things too, they finally just came out and they said, it's the Republican Party's fault, which is an ideologically extreme, doesn't accept facts for reality. And for that, he wasn't booked on nearly as many shows as he traditionally was. Well, he just wrote a piece in The Atlantic, and he, you know, saying that there are five Republican parties. You know, agree with it or disagree with it. The House Republican Party, the Senate, the presidential, and then a Southern Republican Party, you know, and a Northern one. And basically his argument is that disproportionately the power now lies in the House Republican Party and the Southern Republican Party,
right,
that have no interest in finding solutions, that have a cultural history of rejecting government, of rejecting, you know, any sort of forward-moving process. And as we know, from a time of about 150 years ago, when they don't get what they want, they're kind of willing to just throw the ball down and walk away. And you see that influencing almost everything they do right now.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And I think that point is well taken. Essentially, the crazies, and I hate to pat myself on the back, but the book that Stephen Sherrill and I wrote in 2006 was essentially like, the fringe of the party is now taking over the party, and that's basically what's happened. And we're not talking about anything particularly profound here, particularly to this audience. They're aware of it, but the question is now we're starting to see at least maybe some indication that some element of the Democratic Party is at least planning to do something to respond to this reality. I mean, clearly President Obama, did not respond to this reality early enough. Maybe he's not even responded to it now, frankly. And
the problem is when you have a system set up on sort of based upon a lot of it based on tradition, decorum, you know, that everyone has the, you know, that we may disagree, but everyone has the same respect for democracy and the same love of country, that even if the people win who they disagree with, they will accept that because of their love of country. We're dealing with people that don't accept those notions anymore, that are perfectly happy to hurting the country, burning it down to get what they want, who are apocalyptic, some of them in nature. Others are just careerists and realize this is the way to get ahead.
Right.
And, you know, the talk radio, Fox News wing that realizes this is the way to make money. I mean, there's other elements involved in it. But there's these true believers. It used to be that you had people in there that were relatively sane people that had to respond to the crazies on the right. So they had to take some positions they probably would rather not, but they were, you know, they had to serve their coalition. Now we literally have people in serving in the House, particularly, but also in the Senate, who are just as big lunatics as the people they're representing. That are just as dumb. That say things just as stupid. Just as unscientific. Not based in fact. And, you know, I mean, like any week we could sit here and there have been 10 comments made in the past week that are just utterly ridiculous.
Right.
Sam Johnson the other day, Republican from Texas, which is a shock because usually the Republican coalition from Texas are some real geniuses, you know, just basically said that Obamacare is a dictatorship, that Obama's becoming a dictator with what he did. And at some point you just want to sit there and be like, look, dick. You know, this was passed through our democracy. This guy was reelected after that. You've tried to repeal this thing 37 times now. Stop. You know, how is that a dictatorship?
And right. Obviously, I mean, the irony is, of course,
but
that all of the...
I don't know if he's trying to just appeal to the lunatics that he serves, or he is one of them, or likely both.
Right. I mean, at some point, it really doesn't matter, but I think to a certain extent... The more and more of that House caucus are in fact those people. I mean I think is quite clear. Not only are they beholden to a base that they have sort of like one sort of honed steel, I guess, by breaking it down and building it back up again, have they created sort of this pure, uncut version of insanity as their base that they have to play to? I think a lot of them are actually those same people. I mean, I think a lot of them genuinely believe it. I also happen to think that the percentage of those people
who are not in some way Christian fundamentalists, I think has got to be pretty low. I mean, I think, you know, that's the thing that I think sort of gets lost in this. All of this is sort of, they have a fundamentalist worldview, and it's...
Well, what do you say when somebody argues with you and says, you know, their argument, which this was an actual argument used by a Republican congressman, who said basically when you're arguing over global warming and us being flooded, saying that that's not going to happen because God said in the Bible after what he did to Noah that he would never flood us again. So what you're saying has no basis in fact because God promised us that. I mean, how do you respond to crap like that?
I mean, the bottom line is
an elected freaking congressman.
Yeah, the bottom line is we've got zealots, and you need to fight zealotry with not necessarily zealotry, but you need to fight it. I mean, that's the thing, and we have seen just far too much capitulation. Now, I want to make something.
And that's where we started this. I'll just say in 2 seconds because we went off on this thing, but that's where we started this conversation, which is, you know, that in a society where, you know, we're a democracy where you're basing a lot of stuff, you know, some of it's based on law, but a lot of it's tradition, decorum, respect, whatever. When one side starts to repeatedly ignore the rules, how the other side handles it is key, because that's how dictatorships rise.
Right. And I want to make something clear, because I know that, you know, the I want to make something absolutely clear. This is not to say that there aren't a large percentage of Democrats who take advantage of this situation and use the Republicans as cover to push particularly policies that are particularly favorable to particularly the wealthy in this country.
And they tend to fall in the careerist part of that.
Well,
I mean, there's a few legitimately crazy ones, but I think most of them, they're doing it for the next lobbying job when they're
right.
done.
Right. But my point is that there's also just sort of, you know, we, the wealthy have captured Congress on both sides of the aisle. But when we talk about appointing justices, and judges, when we talk about putting heads at the EPA or the NLRB or the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, when we talk about, I mean, this is, you know, I want to transition into this filibuster fight. I mean, this is sort of just simply the basic functioning of government. We can't have in some respects, we are prevented from having the populist argument that needs to happen in this country, because we also have people who have just driven government off the rails and prevented, at least from a legislative perspective, not in a broader context. So,
well, we're in sort of I don't want to call it uncharted territory because we were probably there pre-Civil War too, and at certain other points in our history. But
that is slightly before my time.
I'm sorry?
That is slightly before my time.
Yeah, me too. I was a little bit after that, Andrew Johnson's administration. The thing is, but I mean, when you look at it, when you analyze history, when you look at everything, there were states, right, where, I mean, look at if, you know, when we're looking at the NSA stuff right now and what our intelligence apparatus has done, for example, you know, if people can either were alive or I was only a few years old, so read history, you may have looked up and learned about the Church Committee back in the 70s that looked at after Watergate and after what came out about some of the things the CIA was doing and trying to assassinate leaders abroad and actually did, looked into a lot of what had happened.
COINTELPRO and
I'm sorry?
COINTELPRO, et cetera, the
yes,
domestic
and look into, you know, and they try to, well, that was led by Frank Church, who is a liberal from Idaho. Now, are you going to imagine somebody liberal getting elected from Idaho these days? Talk radio, our culture, everything else has so polarized it that right now states that are rural and white, you can assume that you're going to get at the very least 30 lunatic Republican senators in any Senate. Because pretty much it's impossible to get, you know, out of Alabama, out of, you know, Idaho, Wyoming, Utah, Oklahoma. I mean, we can go on and count them, but there's enough states so that if you need to reach a 60 vote threshold to get anywhere, you've got so little wiggle room because you immediately start off with 30 people that wouldn't vote for anything you did.
Right. Right. And now we have, I mean, this level of obstruction has just been, I mean, it's been relentless. And yesterday, Reid met with the Democratic caucus. And, you know, look, we've been down this road before. So, you know, I have a grain of salt.
It feels like a broken record replaying itself.
You know, I've got my salt lick right next to me.
Wait,
right
is
now.
Harry Reid threatening to do something about the obstruction again? Will there be another handshake deal? Because Mitch McConnell has proven himself trustworthy over the last 20, 25 years on so many occasions. I would just shake his hand because I think you can trust that.
You know, I keep saying this. I think I keep saying this every time, but Harry Reid now has gone on the floor. He said McConnell broke the deal, supposedly in the caucus, in the Thursday caucus. Reid, according to Politico, began by apologizing to his colleagues for cutting a bipartisan deal to avert the nuclear option, including at the beginning of this year. And he said,
I ate on
some of these nominees. It's written sh. I assume he actually said I ate the shite on some of these nominees, he told his colleagues. And so this is, you know, again, like, I don't know what the deal he can make with McConnell is this time, if this is a bluff. I don't know what deal he thinks he can make.
He came out and he said that I heard that, yeah, that two of the nominees, I mean, we're talking about the Department of Labor now, NLRB, as you said, talking about the Consumer Bureau, which they don't believe in, so they won't allow anyone to run that. You know, we're talking about a bunch of judges.
EPA, head of the EPA.
We're talking about a number of things here, and of course, they're like, well, you know, who, I can't think of who it was. It was Chuck Grassley about a few weeks ago, but some other imbecile in the Republican Party is like, well, why do we need to pack the courts? They work just as well as they do with the current number of people, which is idiotic. And it's like, well, there's three vacancies, moron. That when there are vacancies, you fill them. See, that's the way it works.
The Republicans were talking about trying to shift the three vacancies on the D.C. Court of Appeals to other circuits. I mean,
right.
And as a way of maintaining a Republican domination of that court.
Right. And to add to all of this, most of these guys that are saying what they're saying right now were the very same ones that were threatening the nuclear option in 2005.
Right.
The exact same thing, so they got most of what they wanted. But now it's the you know, and again, I just get so tired of these guys cowering to the empty threats of Mitch McConnell.
Well, look.
Because the truth is, here it is. Guess what, guys? You know, one, really? Oh, my God. Now Mitch McConnell has threatened to double secret probation on you? Like, he's going to block everything? You better not do it, because he's threatening if you do it. Now they're really going to obstruct.
Well, I mean, here's the problem. I mean, Ezra Klein had a piece about this, was essentially, they have obstructed to the point where the threat that they're going to obstruct more has no leverage, because they have obstructed everything.
And right. I mean, so what are they going to obstruct? Immigration? A gun bill?
Yeah.
Are they going to obstruct? There's just no point. They're already doing this to everything. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, if you're watching all what's going on in this country right now, I mean, are we watching the motorcycle vagina bills going through North Carolina? Where people are inserting, you know, these bills into things that have nothing to do with them at the, you know, in the middle of the night. What happened here in Ohio, where they slipped a couple of anti-abortion measures in a budget bill so that it wouldn't be debated and wouldn't talk to the media and got this thing passed without any debate. Point being, you know, hello guys, if the Republican Senate, the Republicans take over the Senate, in 2014, if you don't think the federal government is going to look just like North Carolina right now.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, Obama may be able to block a certain amount of this stuff, but, and the Democrats hopefully will be able to block some of it too. But I promise you, they'll use the nuclear option immediately. And they immediately will start passing things right through from their whole wish list.
All right. Well, let's
North Carolina, just like all these other states they took over right afterwards. It'll be because they realize that chances are, if Hillary Clinton's a nominee, she's going to win in 2016, because all the stuff we're talking about doesn't bode well for the Electoral College or really any other Democratic nominee. And in 2016, from Kelly Ayotte to Pat Toomey to Rob Portman, who's acted like an imbecile here, to others, they won a number of races in 2010 in swing states that they very very well might lose. And so there's as good a chance of the Senate going back to the Democrats in 2016, particularly with somebody at the top of the ticket who wins big, as there is of the Republicans to take it for taking it in 2014. So the truth is, they're looking at a two-year window. And if you don't think they're going to take that window and stuff through every single Koch brothers, you know, National Right to Life Committee, NRA, and the rest wish list, You're fooling yourself.
Yeah. Now let's be explicit here. What we're talking about. They would essentially change the rules with a 51 vote majority, and the rules would change if Reid goes through with this, to basically say you need a simple majority to confirm presidential appointees. Nominees to executive offices. Nothing would change in terms of judges. Nothing would change in terms of legislation. There are people who want to go further with this in terms of with judges.
With everything, perhaps?
But, you know, but here's the calculation, okay? Is that assume that a Republican wins in 2016. Unlikely in terms of presidents, but assume. And then also assume that the Republicans take over the Senate in 2016. The Democrats have – I mean, it is very hard. I guess John Bolton comes to mind. But it's very hard to think about an example of when a Republican president has picked a head of an agency – nominated a head of an agency when they have not been confirmed by the Senate. I mean, it is just very rare when Democrats have been in control that they have done this. It's different with judges.
And in the Democrats' defense, anybody with as big a milk mustache as Bolton.
No, I understand.
I
think there are times where it is where you do this. But there's an
amendment in the Constitution. If you have a milk mustache of a certain length and width, don't want you going to the UN to blow up 10 floors of the UN building, as you said you'd like to see happen, and throw shoes at people.
My point is that Democrats have obstructed nominees, heads of agencies, in a much more rare fashion. So this isn't that much of a risk, because the Democrats probably wouldn't exercise. Wouldn't be filibustering too many heads of agencies anyways going forward in the future. I just don't think that's the case. The risk is that the Republicans might take over the Senate, and they may extend this as a precedent and go with a 50-vote legislation.
And
they will probably do that anyways.
Look at what these people have done. I mean, these are people that, if you just want to take the example in Texas – where they couldn't get their bill through by midnight. First of all, here's what they did. So you want to talk about rule changing? That they needed a two-thirds majority to get through all the anti-abortion measures, because that was what you need on these more controversial type measures in the Texas legislature. So they just called a special session, and then they declared the two-thirds rule no longer exists for the special session. Now we just need a majority, a simple majority. After that, when they couldn't get through their bill because of what Wendy Davis and others did, they voted after midnight, plainly against the rules. Then somebody literally sat there and changed the timestamp on the vote to pretend it had been before midnight. And had so many people not been watching at that moment, then they would have gotten away with it. So look at what they did. They changed the rules. They voted at a time clearly they weren't allowed to, and they literally committed fraud to sit there and change the timestamp on something. This is what the people in this party are willing to do. So, yeah, they probably will extend it to everything, which is why Democrats should do it on everything now. But, again, unless they find a way to call in the paramilitary, we still do have a Democratic president, which means they still do have to find a way to override vetoes.
Yes, and so the bottom line is that – you know, in 2014, you've got 19 Democrats up for re-election, 14 up for the Republicans. But in 2016, as you mentioned, you've got 13 Democrats up for re-election and 24 Republicans up for re-election in 2016.
And so, the Republicans are in, again, I mentioned Ayotte.
Yeah.
I mentioned Portman. I mean, there's a lot of swing seats there. There's a lot of people like Ayotte and Toomey, or two that come to mind, that are way too conservative for the states they want. And they want, oh, and another one, I mean, Johnson in Wisconsin.
Right.
I mean, he's a lunatic who's more worthy of being from Alabama and representing them, and no offense to progressive Alabamans, if that's the right way to put it, who are listening, but, you know, overall state. I mean, sure, there'll be money dumped in there, but the Democrats won't be as surprised and dumb. I assume in 2016 there'll be a Democratic candidate at the top of the ticket winning Wisconsin, likely by a decent margin. So, I mean, you know, we would have to pick people as crazy out of the mainstream as Republicans have been doing, which for us to go to that side, I think we'd need to go for LaRoucheites or something to not pick up that back those seats up again in 2016. So there may be a two-year, you know, period of time when they control Congress, but we know during that period of time we're going to have a Democratic president.
Right.
You know, I mean, he doesn't always support everything we support. I assume he won't sign crazy abortion bills and crazy anti-gay bills and things into law.
And
I hope I can safely assume that.
Yeah. And so I think, you know, the risk, you know, and what never gets calculated into this, too, is the risk of not doing anything in terms of a precedent setting, because there is no reason to believe that if the Republicans get away with not nominating, essentially trying to nullify the legislation that created the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau by holding up its director, to essentially defang the EPA, keep the EPA from doing its job by not approving somebody, to do the same thing with the National Labor Relations Board. There is also a precedent being set here as well, that if there is no response, that will have just as detrimental effects going down in the future. So, you know,
I think the Secretary of State, the block of Secretary of Defense,
yes.
Again, this is what's been going on now. You know, you wrote your book in 2006, as you said. I wrote mine in 2008 about McCain, who isn't even as crazy as some of the other ones, pointing out some of the stuff going on with his party. And the truth is, I wrote articles as far back as the late 90s after the 94 Republican House takeover. And every time sort of our response was, they've gone to the fringe. You know, it's hard to believe they could get much crazier than this. And then they do.
Yeah.
So it's only, is there a place where it has to stop? I guess. I mean, I don't know if you can get much crazier than Jim Inhofe and Louis Gohmert, but history tells us they can find somebody crazier, because they always do. You know, so I mean, at some point you need to stand up to this kind of behavior, or they start setting precedents for what. I mean, the filibuster is a great example. It was only used in what was considered extreme circumstances on very contentious legislation in the past, and then we allowed them to start using it a little bit more during Bill Clinton's time with no response, and then even much more than that now during Obama's time, and now it's become just an accepted fact that you need 60 votes for everything. People think that's the way it's always been. No. Even with the existence of the filibuster for many, many, many years, it was rarely, if ever, used.
Yeah,
that's what precedent does.
And this is it's obviously there's risk inherent in everything, but there's just as much risk inherent in doing nothing. So hopefully, I don't know. I mean, I haven't read anything yet as to get a sense of when this is going to go down. But if you're going to do it, do it sooner rather than later, right?
Harry Reid has to start realizing that there is a point that when you make empty threats and never live up
yes.
to them, people really don't take you seriously on those threats anymore.
Yes, and look, the bottom line is not just Harry Reid. The bottom line is you got Rockefeller apparently is saying that he is now sort of ready to do this. There's a couple other senators who said that they weren't before, who are supposedly ready now to do this. So I think it's going to happen. And I imagine if you're going to do it, like I say, you do it sooner rather than later.
That's it. Always what these guys do is they wait until it's too late.
Right.
It's kind of like what Obama should have done when he had 59 and 60 senators, but he decided to be Mr. Nice Guy and let the other guys have two-thirds of what they wanted, and then by the time he was ready to stand up to them in any way, shape, or form, they controlled the House.
Yeah,
and he had many fewer senators. It's kind of like, you know, had Harry Reid done this when we started off, this congressional session, we had 55 votes. We're now down to 54. Would he like to wait longer?
Right. Well, Cliffy, hope springs eternal. I would like to see this happen. And also, frankly, it just makes the Senate more Democratic.
I mean, this isn't just about partisan, you know, gain, even though at this point I would find it hard not to be a partisan because I look at one party whose party's policies or lack thereof is literally insane. But again, this is about government. This is about government working. Stuff is supposed to pass. That's theoretically the reason we have a government. There are problems in society. You pass bills to address those problems. That's what they're there for. None of that's happening anymore.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, it's ridiculous. And really, you know, a bit of strategic advice, because I don't know what the hell the DSCC is doing, you know, or other independent groups. Come on. I mean, Jesus Christ, guys. You know, Mitch McConnell could cause a lot less trouble in Washington if you would spend the next year and a half concentrating $50 million on beating the living crap out of him in Kentucky.
Well, now
and he might actually still win, but if you pinned him down there, now there's a reasonable alternative from a very prominent Democratic family in Kentucky, Alison Lundergan Grimes. If you were to pin him down there, so he had to spend all his money defending himself and all his time in Kentucky trying to hold on because he's got a 30% approval rating, guess what? He'd be in Washington a lot less and able to cause a lot less trouble. I don't understand how it is people don't seem to get this.
I think that's an that's not only is that a great point. The one other thing I want to add to this that Ezra Klein had posted an email he got from a Senate Democratic staffer who says their theory. At least this one staffer's theory is that McConnell wants this. He wants Harry Reid to go nuke because then McConnell is basically it's out of his hands, right? He's not responsible he can't make an active decision to obstruct any of these nominees. He doesn't have to work out the details. It's just a foregone conclusion. There's nothing he can do. He can throw his hands up in the
But also he loves his whole campaign, as you'll see as it unfolds. He's just one of the most shameless, disgusting people that has been in Washington in, you know, in the last few decades, and that's saying a lot. He will play the victim. That's what he does.
Oh, definitely.
I mean, that's all conservatives like to do. Oh, my God, they're hurting me.
It'll be great for his fundraising.
I can write that fundraising letter from already. An unprecedented dictatorial Obama, right. Reed, Pelosi assault on our freedoms. I mean, it's easy to write. So I could see him liking it, too. He likes it either way. Either if he keeps obstructing stuff, the Tea Party loves him for that. And if they do the big push and take away power, he gets to write that fundraising pitch about the unprecedented assault on our liberties going on by the liberals in Washington.
Indeed,
it's win-win for him.
It is, but I think it's also a win if we can get appoint people to the National Labor Relations Board.
I mean it's win-win for him, and then on our side, one way. Is we win too, and another way we lose.
Right.
So it makes sense to give him what he wants, let him write his fundraising letters. You know, let's get the people in there who deserve to be in there. Let's set the precedent that needs to be set. Oh, and by the way, people who have independent amounts of money, start kicking this guy's ass and keeping him in Kentucky.
Cliff Schechter, ladies and gentlemen, listen up, you people with a lot of money and independent outside groups. Do what Cliff Schechter says. All right, Cliffy, we'll talk to you next week. Appreciate it, buddy.
Hey, always a pleasure, Sammy. Thanks, man.
All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll be talking to Matthew Film Guy. All right, ladies and gentlemen, it is now that part of the Casual Friday where we have someone on to recommend a film for me to watch on Netflix or Amazon over the weekend. And sometimes we bring on comedians, as you know. Sometimes we bring on authors. And sometimes we bring on a film expert. And that is who we have today. But first, we have his theme guy. It's the Matthew Film Guy theme song. Theme song. There you go. Matthew Film Guy, the sort of the that's the elevator Muzak version. The other one's much, much more harder. Matthew, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Sam. Pleasure to be here as always. That theme always gets me pumped up.
Yes, you sound like you're really, really pumped up right now.
I just gotta say, I'm liking
it. I can't hear you. Is this, could you put his microphone up?
You're What's that, Michael?
I'm sorry. I guess my mic wasn't up. I'm just liking your theme song more and more every time I hear it.
Thanks. It does grow on you, doesn't it?
It's really
the
growing.
Of,
it's
Jason
up there.
Pace. Jason
well, it's
Pace
been
a
while. Now, Matthew, last time you were on in early June, you recommended that I watch A New Leaf starring Walter Matthau, which is a comedy film about a basically a trust fund. Well, not baby, but a guy who
right.
loses his trust fund, and
that's
right. It is from what I understand, a funny movie. But I did not see it. I did not watch it. I don't know why I didn't watch it. I ended up watching this week. I did see a movie, and it was Gasland 2. And I'm going to talk to Josh Fox about it hopefully next week. But I did not, and that is not a comedy. In fact,
it's not
darker than the first one in some respects.
Don't people light farts on fire in that movie? I heard
no water on fire.
Oh, water. Okay, yeah, I can see how I made that mistake.
But I did not see A New Leaf. But I really, I'm quite convinced that I will see it this weekend. Almost. Convinced.
Great. I know you're going to love that one, Sam. But I understand if you can't watch these movies. At this point, I'm just talking to the people out there who might want a movie to watch.
Yes. I mean, the upshot is that we have thousands of listeners, particularly on Fridays. We have even more than that. And who knows how many of them have watched the movies that you've recommended?
I'd like to think all of them.
Probably tens.
And I know that Matt has in the past made mention that my appearances happen to coincide with some of the highest ratings you guys get.
Mm.
I'm not taking credit. I'm just pointing it out.
Well, I think that's – I don't know how scientific, but we say that to all the guests. You know that, right?
What?
What is new with you, Matthew? What do you have to tell us here? Did you watch the Marin show? I mean, I'm asking you because just as a critic of these things, and you used to work with Mark both on Break Room mm-hmm. Live. People don't know this, I think, that you were one of our editors, mm-hmm. film video editors, and then you also did some on camera work with him. And you were on some of the early WTFs. Now that the season is over, the Marin season is over, what say you?
You know, I'll say this. It got so much better towards the end. I didn't watch the one-hour finale yet, but the
Wait, there's a one-hour finale?
Sorry?
There's a one-hour finale?
Or I guess they aired two episodes on one day.
Right.
I haven't watched those
right.
last two
right.
yet. I've been kind of busy. As you know, I'm teaching a film class at the JCC in Forest Hills. And,
yes, people should be if you're
trying
in...
to take care of the rest of my business.
Right.
But the shows got consistently better as it went on, and I have to say I was laughing at pretty much all of them. And Mark's acting took a few steps forward as well, which was kind of my main kind of – I was sort of nervous for him towards the beginning.
Yes.
But but I think he, you know, with more practice, he eased into it. I don't know what order they shot the episodes in, so it may be a kind of a misnomer to say that it got better as it went on. But maybe I got used to it. But I was really enjoying the show very much.
Well, it sounds like you're being very diplomatic, and you're attempting to get, are you saying
I can't legitimately enjoy the show, even though Mark and I have had a sordid past?
Was your past sordid?
Well, you know, we had, as he does with everybody, yourself included, he has kind of a love-resent relationship, and, you know, and those things reflect
sometimes on the way you view
his output. Maybe not everybody, but I think it does for you. But
I actually
enjoy the show.
What did he resent you for?
I just always took it to be some sort of intrinsic personality trait. Nothing on the professional level, clearly, but, you know, Mark can find things, can't he?
Well, let's hear it. I mean, I want to hear what it is that he found.
Oh, it's not for me to say.
What do you mean it's not for you to say? Who else would possibly say it?
Is it just for you to
Mark
heavily imply?
Or a disinterested third party?
Well, listen, I am a disinterested third party, but you can tell me and I will talk about it.
Well, you know, Mark and I got into a couple arguments over films, you know, like my take on certain films. You know, one of our episodes at WTF was around Where the Wild Things Are, which I thought was a kind of a shameless sort of hipsterification of a childhood classic, and Mark was really like wounded by that, and he gets that thing like, you think you're smarter than me, you think you're better than me, and you know, and I'm you're not better than me, and then he shouts you down, and then you know, you make up later. But
wait, so wait a second, is that true?
Did you hear that episode?
No,
huh?
No, God, no. Wait, did he really get upset? Like, is that what happened?
Yeah.
Is that he started getting upset because you knew more about movies than he did?
I didn't even say I knew more about movies.
I just gave him my opinion and my take,
and he took it there. You know, he's very sensitive that he thinks somebody thinks he's better than him or thinks that he knows more than him. And granted, I have a sort of a rhetorical style that may come off that way sometimes. Matt and Michael can maybe back me up on that. But it's not intended to assert my superiority.
Well, no. There's no doubt that you're a little bit pompous about it, but what difference does it make?
That's just a stylistic choice. It doesn't reflect an inherent belief in myself, believe me.
Well, it doesn't matter. I mean, that doesn't even matter. That's not the issue. The issue is, like, I mean,
right.
I went through this with Mark because he was upset that he felt that I was trying to make him look stupid about politics just because I would read more about politics.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
how
I didn't
dare
realize
you.
He was that sensitive.
No, but you know, that's the thing, and he's a sensitive guy. You know, it's just I know this for myself. The people who are the most kind of oblivious about the effect they have on other people in terms of hurting their feelings and running roughshod over them are also the most sensitive. And you know, in some ways, likes repel likes. So that sort of explains the dynamic between
I want to slow down here because did I just hear you say that not only is Mark hyperly and almost in some respects crazily too sensitive when he talks to someone who he thinks is implicitly trying to make him look bad, but he also just treads all over other people's feelings?
Well, no more than I do.
Don't deflect, Matthew.
No, I'm not deflecting. I'm not here just to, you know, rag on Mark. But,
I just came up. I just was trying to think, the Marin season ended, and I just wanted to get your take on it. And then you went all nuclear on him.
I did?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a lot of, you just criticized him quite a bit.
No, I didn't. I feel like I was led there.
Wow, look, I sit back. I let my guests talk. That's what I do.
Sure, Sam, sure. That's why you're good at what you do, because you don't add anything. You don't conduct. You just let it happen. I get it.
That's right. I plant a seed, maybe, and maybe I put a little water on it. Maybe I cover it with
a little
dirt.
Fertilizer. Lots of fertilizer, actually.
Yeah, maybe a little compost, and then maybe I also put some weed suppressant down around it, paper or some type of cloth. Straw.
Yeah, maybe we'll change the name of this segment to Matthew Marin Guy.
All right. Well, I mean, you know, that was just one thing that, you know, I wanted to just get your take on. I mean,
Well, what did you think? Did you watch it all?
We don't got time for that. So listen, Matthew. let's hear what you have this week for us. I should say, although I know that she can't be listening because she can only listen by her computer. She hasn't quite figured it out yet. But when we get our app, she'll be able to listen. That Isabel was scheduled for this week. Isabel
right.
Gillies, but she was traveling. And so when I told you that she's traveling, she couldn't make it, you responded with, Matthew Film Guy is always ready to go, even if he's traveling. Talk to you then. And I know that you wanted me to tell tell Isabel that you said that to hurt her feelings, but I'm just going to announce
what?
It on the show, and that's
Here
it.
Here comes more of that compost, Sam. Not
what?
At all.
What are you
Not at all.
All right.
Whatever. I just wanted you to know that you can count on me. You know, you did me a solid by giving me a recommendation for that teaching position that I'm now taking.
Well,
and,
it's well-deserved.
I just wanted you to know that I back you up.
All right. I mean, you didn't even need to. You could have said, just like Matthew, film guy, is always ready to go. And then you added
right.
the part, even if he's traveling.
You're right. You're right. There may be a little edge to what I said there. And Isabel, if you have been able to figure out your computer, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I don't know. It's sort of like, you remember when Tim Pawlenty sort of dissed Romney on TV, but he wouldn't do it in front of him at the debate?
What was that? I missed that.
Don't worry about it. All right, so okay. What do you got for me this week, Matthew Film Guy?
All right, well, in preparing for this class that I keep
missing. Oh, wait a second. You know what I did do? I did watch Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy again. Upon your recommendation,
good.
I had seen it, and I did watch that again. And you know what? It was even better the second time around.
Great. You know, that's a great movie. That it's kind of like one of those puzzle movies where you always don't kind of know where you're at. You kind of watch little clues to know where the timeline takes you.
Yeah, Gary
Oldman.
So it
Oldman does reward
also,
multiple
just,
viewings.
He's amazing, that guy. I think he's great, Gary Oldman. But go ahead.
Well, speaking of Gary Oldman, he appears in an early role in the film that I'm recommending today. And it is one of my all-time favorites that I will be showing at this class called Mean Time by Mike Leigh.
Mean Time. I didn't see that one. I remember Mike Leigh. Mean Time. Tell us, please. Do tell.
Okay, well, it takes place in Thatcher-era England. That's when it was made in, I think, 1983. And it's about a family who is on the dole, chronically unemployed. The father has given up and basically is drinking. The two sort of 20-year-old and late teens sons are trying to find work, but they keep having to go on the dole. The mother's sister is middle class, whereas this family is working class, and she comes in and tries to assert herself in a well-meaning but kind of condescending way to give them make work, to paint her house, to do things. And it's a really amazing drama. It really embodies Mike Leigh's sense of making films as a process of discovery. He's not making satirical points. It's no easy kind of political kind of commentary, even though it is set in a highly political sort of milieu. You know, it does have a lot of the working class versus middle class kind of friction, but nobody is idealized. All the characters are extremely endearing but also flawed, and you're always shifting your perspectives, which is my favorite thing about Mike Leigh in general. You know, he develops his movies as improvs with the actors, and he asks them to come up with characters. So at any point, each character is basically the center of the narrative. And then through all these workshops that they do, he forms a script, and then they shoot that script. But what it results in is that characters are continually being sort of sympathetic and unsympathetic, and who you're sort of with and not with always is changing. You don't really know where you're at. And one of the storylines, it also features a young Tim Roth in one of his early roles,
mm-hmm.
and he's the youngest of them all, and he kind of falls in with, Gary Oldman's character, who is a skinhead, and he's sort of taken that role that sort of route to escape the sort of chronic unemployment and poverty that he's found himself in. And you kind of don't know if Tim Roth is going to fall in with that crowd, if he's going to kind of go the route that his middle-class aunt is trying to get him to escape. And it's extremely compelling. It's endearing, and it keeps you locked into this family's plight in a really good way. And it's not streaming on Amazon or Netflix, but it is on YouTube, and you can get the DVD on Netflix.
Huh. Well, I'm sorry. I did not hear anything you said after you said the word milieu. I got too distracted by that word.
I didn't
hear anything of the rest of what you said. You said something about it's not on Netflix. You got to watch it on YouTube. Is it high def on YouTube?
No, it's not high def anywhere. It's not been re-released in high def.
In other words, is it viewable on YouTube? I mean, is it actually because I can access YouTube via my Roku.
Yeah, it'll look pretty good on there. It's in segments. One person posted it in full in a high quality, but that one has hard subtitles in Spanish, which probably is a little annoying. But another person has loaded it in segments, like 10-minute segments, and you can make that into a playlist and play that all the way through. But for everybody else out there who has Netflix, it's on DVD, readily available, and it's highly.
I canceled my DVD part of the Netflix.
Say again?
I canceled my DVD part of the Netflix.
All right. Well, you know, I could even send you a copy because I have it on DVD.
All right. Well, but that doesn't help everybody else. I mean, but it's on YouTube. And, yeah. You know, this actually is a good time for me to remind people that if we are soon to roll out a Roku app for the Majority Report and also an iOS and Android apps. So if you want to be a beta tester and you're a member, we're only letting members going to beta test. If you're not a member, you can theta test, I guess, or I don't know what would come after beta, but
Delta
test maybe. So you know that I just wanted to throw that out there. People can email us at majorityreporters@gmail.com, put beta test and what device you want to test, and we're a week or two away, I think, from sending out those tests. So the movie is Milieu.
Meantime.
Oh, Meantime.
No, Meantime. Yeah,
Meantime. Meantime by Mike Lee.
And also, Sam, I just want to say, for you personally, since you can't watch a lot of films,
right?
Mike Lee also has a series of short films called the 5-Minute Films that are also on YouTube in high quality, and they are just as good as his longer work. They're amazing 5-minute short little bites of character pieces, and you can check those out too.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
What is the movie? I know there was a Mike Lee movie that a couple of them that I've watched. I can't remember what they are now, but
His biggest films were Naked, Secrets and Lies. All these happened sort of in the early 90s. Uh-huh. Then he's recently come out with Happy Go Lucky, which was a great movie.
Naked and Secrets and Lies. I think I saw. I mean, that was back in the day when I actually, you know, had an element of culture in my life.
Yeah. Well, that's what I try to give you, just a slight part of a
I do appreciate that,
an element.
Matthew. Yeah. And I want to thank you, Matthew Film Guy, as always. Very well spoken, very milieu-y, and enjoyed it.
Thank you for letting me play in your milieu, Sam.
Wait, right. Matthew, before you go, really quick.
Hold on for a second.
Really quick. You see World War Z?
Did I see World War Z? Yes, I did.
What did you think?
I thought it was great. I was into the whole giant swarms of
Spoiler alert.
And I liked it. Wait, I can't hear that. You guys are all talking at once. What's
spoiler
that?
Spoiler alert, buddy.
No, that's in the previews, my friend.
Oh, okay.
Swarms of zombies is not giving anything away in World War Z. And I also liked that it ended on a more...
Come on, dude.
You like that it ended on more of a what?
A traditional horror film footing.
Oh,
that's all.
All right.
I actually enjoyed the movie too. I liked the part where the zombies killed M
at the castle.
All right. Okay. We know what's going on.
That managed to both be spoiling and unenlightening.
All right.
Thanks,
all
guys.
Right. Matthew, we will talk to you sometime in the not too distant future.
Anytime, even if I'm traveling, Sam. Take care.
Okay. Thank you, Matthew. Wow, it gets a last dig into Isabel. now, do we have a Jimmy Roofcake song this week?
Oh, I don't even know.
It does not appear that we do.
I didn't see one this
All right, morning. Well, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll be in the better half of the show. Folks, you can become a member at majority.fm. The best way to listen to the program will be on our new app coming out soon. So, but we also, you know, I'm not gonna lie. The app is a little bit more expensive than we had originally thought. Part of that was because I was walked down a road by somebody that road turned out to be with a fork in it, and then it was washed out by raging waters. And so, it is your support, your membership at majority.fm that helps us develop things like an app and helps us continue this show. So you can also support the show by buying your Amazon crap at Amazon. If you want to be a part of the show, call me at 646-257-3920, 646-257-3920. You can IM me at majority.fm. We'll see you in a second.